So anyways, is that our cold open?
Yeah. Hi.
What's up?
Oh, I'm Clark.
Oh, I'm Karina.
And this is It's Always Spooky.
Bum, ba-da-dum, bum.
It's Always Spooky.
All right. What are we talking about today? We're talking about, I think it's 2007, right?
Something like that.
We were looking at it earlier. 2007's Paranormal Activity.
Paranormal Activity.
Which is fucking, I'm so glad that we're talking about this movie.
Me too. You know, rewatching it, it's definitely not as scary as I remember it being a kid, teenager.
Well, yeah.
Not as scary as I remember it being as a teenager. But this is a pivotal moment in like found footage films, even I would go so far as to say as like haunting films, that sort of thing. Paranormal Activity kind of blazed a new path.
Absolutely. Well, you think the only real thing before this was Blair Witch Project?
Yeah.
I don't know if Wreck came out. Wreck might have come out between Blair Witch and Paranormal Activity, but we're not covering that movie today.
Yeah.
So it's like the first found footage film that then gained like a new resurgence in that found footage film style.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that even though we're just talking about the first one today, in every subsequent Paranormal Activity, it's like they had to come up with a new, like, not trope, but like a new, it's not angle, it's like a new like way to observe the paranormal.
Yeah.
You know, like a new tactic or.
You actually see a lot of the tools used in Phasmophobia used throughout the Paranormal Activity movies.
Like,
oh my gosh, like we'll probably talk about it a little bit later, but in the first one when they do the powder in like on the top of the stairs and going into the room, it's like, that's like, salt. That's the fucking salt. That's not a wraith.
Right? All right, metadata real quick. So metadata here is going to be pretty simple because it's shot like a mockumentary found footage film, so there's no title card.
No.
There's no even like casting or like a starring cast, anything like that, producer, director. Like I think there's one little production company before they do that little exposition where it's like, this is in remembrance of the families or whatever.
And there's really only like, for the most part, there's only two characters. The two characters, their names in the movie are their names in real life.
Right. Like, and that was done on purpose.
It's
right?
Concise.
They made sure to use people who didn't have, I don't think they had any film credits, or maybe they only had a couple, so that they wouldn't be well known. It could be written off as like, no, these were real people. Like they weren't actors. It's directed by Oren Peli. I was going to see what other things he had done. But the tagline is, what happens when you sleep? Looks like he did Paranormal Activity, Chernobyl Diaries. He did Insidious, The Red Door. He did Next of Kin, Paranormal Activity. So he's done a lot of the Insidious movies, which is kind of interesting. Yeah, he did Insidious Chapter 2 also.
Interesting.
Interesting.
Insidious is a sleeper hit.
It is. And he produced that movie, right? Because James Wan directed it. But
yeah.
He produced it. He also did The Bay.
Yeah.
So it looks like he's been a producer in a lot. I'm kind of curious if this was his first directing.
We'll definitely have to cover Insidious because that was one of the ones that I kind of like didn't care to watch. And then when I saw it, I was like, what the fuck?
Wow.
This is so good.
It is. Yeah. It's really fucking good. They're really good. I watched The Red Door recently and it wasn't bad.
Yeah.
It wasn't bad. I honestly really kind of liked the wraparound to the little boy in the first one now being an adult and going to college. I kind of liked that angle personally, but anywho's in. Oh, okay, this is a really interesting trivia point that I'm going to get into early, but it's mostly just because we talk about budget in the metadata.
Yeah.
And you know that this is almost single-handedly the most profitable movie in existence.
Really? I imagine it didn't need much budget-wise.
It cost an estimated $15,000.
Wow.
It made $9.3 million in its first year.
Holy fuck.
Listen. Jason Blumhouse of Blumhouse Pictures, right? He worked for Miramax back when this movie came out, and he passed on Blair Witch when it came through. He was like, it doesn't look good, and he regretted that decision. So when Paranormal Activity came on his desk, he was like, absolutely, we're fucking doing it. And the proceeds from that, like, win made him start Blumhouse Pictures.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
That's how profitable this fucking movie was.
Damn. Yeah, because the only other movie that we've covered that had that little of a budget was Milk and Cereal.
Right.
Yeah.
And we'll see how much that fucking movie makes, honestly. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Like, maybe in monetizations, because it's not like he released it in a theater. No. This was released in theaters, and it wasn't a wide release either.
No.
Like, people had to petition in their towns to get this movie played in select theaters.
Yeah, because I remember the second one played everywhere, yeah. But the first one was hard to find.
Yes.
And then when, because I watched the second and the second, third, and fourth in theaters.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, a Paranormal Activity movie in the theaters is fucking horrifying.
It is. I remember taking Harrison to see the third one. And, like, when we were walking back to our car, we gave, like, every, like, dark corner, like, a 15-foot berth.
It was one of Patrick and I's first dates to go watch the third one.
Yeah, it was ours, too.
Yeah, and he, like, almost ripped my arm off jumping in the theater.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, I feel like, especially for millennials, these are like Hallmark movies.
Oh,
for
yeah.
Us.
These yeah. are like, these are like our Blair Witch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was so stoked to watch this again.
Yeah, this is a good ass movie. Do you want to do, you did the synopsis for this.
I did.
You do it.
I did. It's short.
That's fine.
It's sweet. It's to the point. After enduring a lifetime of paranormal experiences, Katie and her engaged-to-be-engaged partner, Mika, are determined to find answers as to what's causing her phenomena.
Do you just love that his name is fucking Mika and not Micah?
Right? It's pretentious.
I just kind of wonder if, like, Katie fucked it up from the beginning and they just never changed. They never corrected her. She's so pretty. I don't want to have to correct her.
I was listening through also because as I was writing that, I was like, I don't feel like they ever say they're married. And then I was like, I know they say that they've been seeing each other for 3 years. And then I listened a little closer and he was like, yeah, we're like engaged to be engaged.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right.
Yep. And she even says at one point, she says, thank you, Mika. You're the best boyfriend ever. It's like, a boyfriend that you fucking own a house with? What the fuck?
Yeah.
And he must be paying most of the bills because she's a student.
Yeah.
No, I think she's I feel like she's a teacher, but she's like going to school at the same time.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And I don't know what he does.
No, she's making jewelry or something.
Yeah, she's
making
beating.
Jewelry with her friend. I don't know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't pretend to know, honestly.
Yeah. They kind of seem like they're one of those like house hunter couples where he's like, oh, I'm a work from home astronaut. And she's like, yeah, I'm a rare butterfly collector. And our budget is $6 billion.
God damn it. If it doesn't just hit you right in the feels. What themes would you give this movie?
I was really basic with this one. And I just wrote found footage and haunted house. But it's actually not a haunted house.
It's a haunted person.
Yeah.
Like
it's a possession.
It's a possession. Yeah, yeah. It is a possession.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh.
Yeah. Fuck.
I like that. I mean, honestly, I can't really think of any others.
No.
Besides maybe like some sort of play on. It's this way that Mika is poking fun at.
Yeah.
The paranormal.
Yeah.
Where he's almost, I mean, he felt it was serious enough to get a video camera, but he's almost taking it as like a joke.
It almost kind of comes across as Katie, she already believes in it because it's been happening to her since she was like 8 years old.
Of course, right.
And so she already believes in it. And I think he is wanting to record something to prove to her that it's in her head or something like that.
Probably.
You know?
It could be. Like, that could be just like a battle of wills, right? He's wanted to prove to her for a long time that like she's overreacting or
yeah.
that like everybody experiences trauma in their past, babe. You just have compartmentalized it as this demon that's been following you.
And I don't get the vibe from her at any point that she actually wanted to be a part of this.
Hell like, no. No, she was yeah. very much against it from the beginning. Like, yeah. she told him, don't entertain this.
Yeah, because she, even when she comes home in the very opening scene, she's like, what happened to a little camcorder?
Exactly.
Like,
what are
it
you
sounded
doing?
Like
yeah.
they had, like, reached a compromise where it was going to be like, okay, yeah, we can try something. It'll be a small camcorder. We'll set it up in one spot. And, like,
I'll give it a shot for a couple of nights and then yeah. I'll drop it. Right.
Yeah. And then he was just like, no.
I want the full tier three video camera.
Yeah.
With the tripod.
I want tier three. I want to have the salt. I want the tripod. We got to find the Ouija board. Mm-hmm. We got to find the picture. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, shit. That is phasmophobia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Don't know where the breaker box was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently they used the director's house for this movie. He like renovated it and repainted it, and they used it for like all of the interior shots. I know, it's kind of cool, huh?
That's how it only cost him $15,000. It was all special effects.
Yeah. And paying the actors, which, I mean, one of the other trivia points that I'll just bring up now is that the actors were paid initially $500 per person for the role, because it's $15,000 budget. But after the success of the movie, they renegotiated that.
I hope they renegotiated to a really good amount.
Yeah, they should. Yeah. Absolutely, they should.
Granted, I wouldn't imagine this took very long to film or anything.
It only
like
took
that.
Like 12 days, I want to say. It was very short. I'll bring it up later.
But. Okay. Yeah.
Shall we get into favorite scenes?
Yeah, I have a few honorable mentions.
Excellent.
And then my favorite and scariest are actually the same scene.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
So my first honorable mention is, okay, so when Mika very first comes home with the camera, they kind of have their little thing about what happened to it just being a camcorder and that sort of thing, and they kind of go about their business with the rest of their evening, and Katie's getting ready for bed and she's in the bathroom, and Mika brings the camera into the bathroom, and he's like, you know, we could get extracurricular with this. And like, I thought that was pretty funny. And then, not the first night, but I think the second night, they decide that it's going to be their spicy night. And they like go back and forth for a second. Mika tries to juke out Katie and say that the camera's off and it's not. And she's like, the light's on. And he's like, that's the standby light. And she's like, that's the record light. And so they end up turning it off. And then when the camera comes back on, Mika's like, what just happened was illegal in Kentucky and in probably 12 more states. and he's like, she's wild. And I thought that was hilarious.
Oh my God. What? I don't remember that.
Yeah. Actually, I guess I had a couple of honorable mentions for this one, because the next one was Katie just standing at the edge of the bed staring for over an hour was hilarious to me.
I had that as one of my honorable mentions too. It's like when you just see her get out of bed and she just does this slow like 180, and then you just see her standing there and she just like slowly moving back and forth, and you just see the time like lapsing on, and you're just like, oh my god.
Yeah.
She just fucking stood there for like 3 hours.
I thought that was so fucking funny. My last honorable mention is after they have a big spat, I think it's after Mika gets the Ouija board, they fight about it because Katie had set a very firm boundary of no Ouija board. That's opening up something that we don't want to open up. Mm-hmm. We're not going to get into that. And he does it anyway. But they end up having a fight. And then when you see the camera turn back on again, they're in their bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And Mika is the only one in frame. And he's looking at the camera and he says, I swear to abide by Katie's rules and regulations of camera use and other things, whatever. Is that good enough? And she's like, you could be a little more sincere.
Right. I did really like, too, I don't know at what point this happens in the movie. It's pretty close. It's when he brings the Ouija board home and they fight and they leave after that point. Like, she says, like, I'm getting out of here. And he goes, wait, well, Katie, wait up. And you just see he's left the camera so that it's still pointing at the Ouija board, because he was about to do it. He was like, hey, Katie, come on, we're going to do the Ouija board. And she freaks out and leaves, and he chases after her. But the camera is still pointed at the Ouija board.
Yeah.
And you just see the planchette, like, moving to various different things. And then as it goes back to goodbye, it like lights the board on fire.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of cool too.
That was a really cool special effect.
Mm-hmm. I had heard that some people thought it spelled Diane or Diana for like the woman that they found the exorcism video of, but then there are other people that thought that it spelled Mika's name.
Ooh, okay.
And I think it would have been really cool if it spelled like Mika and then it spelled like die or something like that. And then like went to goodbye and like lit. But I just thought that was super cool. Because you have to assume that the entity who was talking back was probably Toby.
Yeah.
The like entity from the rest of the movies, because that entity, and this is spoilers for Paranormal Activity 2, but this is almost 20 years old, so.
That's on you.
Get good.
Yep.
but in the second movie, you find out that that Toby was originally haunting her sister's family because Toby wants the firstborn son, which hadn't been born in centuries or generations or whatever. And so at the end of Paranormal Activity 2, the dad used some sort of voodoo to move the curse, to like move the entity over to Katie.
Yeah.
To move it to the like the other familial tie. And I just kind of liked that, because then it ties back to number one, why Katie's being haunted in the first place, and then how the aftermath happens.
Yeah, that adds credence to the assumption that it is Toby that mm-hmm. is speaking to
yeah.
them from the get-go.
From the get-go.
Yeah.
And messing with them from the get-go, which is why I was like, when I was thinking about it being Toby, I was wondering what would Toby have written on the Ouija board.
Also, doesn't it kind of diminish his power a little bit that his name's Toby?
Yeah,
like
it is.
Yeah.
Well, I think he has some sort of demon name.
Yeah, it's probably Tobiathan. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I don't remember. Yeah. It's talked about in the third movie, I'm pretty sure, but it's the little girl who calls him Toby.
Yeah, if you were to walk into a house that's like hella haunted and shit's happening and everything, but then you're like, oh, it's just Toby.
Oh, it's just
like,
Toby.
Oh, okay.
Oh my God, yeah. Well, I was just thinking, like, it's like when you get into a game of Phasmophobia and you look at the name and you're just like, oh my God, it's just Aaron.
Yeah. Yeah, and to think that there's, like, names that people are using for ghosts that are like common millennial names
yeah.
at this point. Like, oh, that's just Chad.
Yeah. Oh, it's just Chad. Fuck yeah. Chad, man.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, Tyson.
No. Did you have any other honorable mentions for favorite?
Oh, no. I just have my favorite, which is also my scariest.
Ooh.
I labeled it as Bofum.
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 Do you want me to do my favorite then?
Yeah.
I don't know if your favorite is the same as my favorite, but I doubt it. My favorite was when Mika wakes up and Katie's gone, and he picks the camera up and he goes all the way around the house looking for her, and he finds her on the porch outside.
Yeah.
Just swinging. And he walks up and he's like, babe, like, what are you doing? Like, you're freezing. Like, what are you doing? And she wakes up and she like, she almost pretends like she wasn't out there in the first place. Like, she has no idea why he's there, why he woke her up, anything like that. And then she just like says, I'm cold. And she just goes inside and then goes back to bed. And it's just one of those moments that it's like unsettling.
Yeah.
You're like, what the fuck was that? And even Mika's like, what the fuck?
I also love that he's like, babe, what are you doing out here? You're freezing.
Yeah.
When 10 minutes prior to that, when the exorcist or whatever it is, the medium comes in, he's like, I take every opportunity I can to go to San Diego.
Yeah.
And it's like, she's freezing. It's San Diego.
Yeah, exactly.
It's probably 80.
It's probably 80 degrees. Even in the middle of the night.
In the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no. It dropped down to a frigid 75.
Yeah, exactly. My other honorable mention, I think, for favorite is the second time the medium comes to their house. And they, at this point, they're like desperate. They're like, we need help. Please come in. And he walks in the door. And you can see the moment he steps to the threshold, he's just like, oh, I can't be here. It's like, no, sorry. I'm feeling this like heavy pressure on my heart right now. And I gotta go. Yeah. And them just being like, no, please, like, please don't leave. It's like, no. I can't stay here. I'm so sorry.
He's like, no, the other guy will be back in a couple days. He can come deal with this. This is not for me. This
is not for me. No. So that's it for me. So go ahead and give your favorite scene if you want to.
Yeah. So my favorite scene, and anybody who's watched this movie will know what I'm talking about just by reading the words that I wrote down.
Oh, let's hear it.
Which is draggy, draggy. because there is something so fucking funny about her getting ripped out of that bed and pulled down the hallway. It is hilarious to me.
It's pretty good.
It is also the apex of the horror.
It's equal parts that. Terrifying.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. The part that gets me, because that's my scariest scene.
Yeah.
The part that gets me for that is you've had this like buildup of tension where those couple of nights where like she either feels breathing on her face or the like the covers get blown off of her, or like any of these things that happen. And then it's, so it's just so jarring when like that final night, you just see her leg like come out and she just like slams on the ground. And then she just noticed, she just goes, "Mika, Mika." And as she's being pulled out, the door just slams shut. And, yeah. and Mika's like tries to run out. And it's kind of like a green room situation where then you just hear her screaming like yeah. bloody murder. She's been dragged all the way across the hall to the guest bedroom on the opposite end, and you can't, like, the camera doesn't follow him, so you just hear the commotion, you hear him say like, "Let her go," and then he drags her back into the room and they close the door and she has a panic attack.
Yeah, and that scene is arguably more scary than the scene with Mika's death.
Yeah,
yeah, because that one, you hear a lot of what happens in that one, but you don't even get to see as much as like her being pulled out of bed.
Yeah. Like no, that dragging scene is, it's really cleverly done.
Yeah.
Because the whole shot is in the camera. I really like, I think there's a moment before she gets dragged out that you see the light turn on in that room.
Yeah.
To kind of like give you a hint about like where to focus your attention on. I really liked it. I really liked that moment where she goes through the door and Mika wakes up and the door just slams shut. I love that moment.
I want to know how that was done. I really want to know
how that was probably done. Done with a wire that they probably yeah. just had attached. And they probably did like a couple of takes of her falling out of the bed, but like on a cushion.
Yeah.
And they went from her falling on the bed to then her already laying on the ground. And they just, you know, dragged her back.
Yeah, because like, I thought about if they did it that way. I thought about if they pulled her forward and did it like
flipped
it in reverse when they did it. Mm. Like, yeah, I want to know. I want to know.
I bet you there's like a behind the scenes that
there
you could find for like how they.
Yeah.
Interviews you could probably find, because like that's probably the most talked about scene.
You would think so.
Plus, like, the fucking bite mark, when the aftermath.
Yeah.
When you see the bite mark on her back, that's so fucking gnarly.
And it actually looks real. It looks...
and the way her yeah. skin around, it's all red and inflamed. Like, oh, my God. Just the... you're trying to also, like, imagine, too, when you see the aftermath, you're like, holy shit. You're just trying to imagine this, like, demonic creature
mm-hmm.
holding her and, like, biting her.
That... the scene with... the draggy that, and the cupboard scene from the second movie, to me those are Paranormal Activity.
Yeah,
like those are the scenes I remember.
Absolutely. That, yeah. Absolutely.
What are yours? We know your scariest. What was your scariest. Favorite?
Well, my favorite is Katie on the Swing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I couldn't
remember
you,
if that was an honorable mention.
Fine. We're yeah. kind of flip. We're just kind of flip-flopping a little bit. I'll tell you, my honorable mention for scariest scene is one, maybe two of the, because there's three endings for this movie.
Yeah.
It's, I think it's just the first two. It's just that moment where Katie gets up, she turns around, she watches Mika for like an hour and a half, and she goes downstairs and you just hear her blood-curdlingly screaming for him.
Yeah.
And I like that moment of... you have no idea what the fuck's going on. He wakes up and immediately goes into like, oh my God, she's being assaulted downstairs just like last time. And so he runs down to help her. But then you hear him almost immediately change to, what are you doing? And then she kills him. And I liked in the version I watched, she comes upstairs and she just, she's all covered in blood. And she just sits by the bed and just rocks back and forth for like 4 hours until there's like a phone call and it's like her friend. And then her friend comes by and you hear her scream because obviously she's seen Mika dead. And then like the police show up
mm-hmm.
and they kill Katie when they come upstairs.
Yeah.
I just love that scene. I think in one of the subsequent Paranormal Activities, there's a little bit of play with parallel dimensions. And there's a character that ends up going through a doorway that he ends up in that same house, like when Katie kills Mika.
Okay.
And he actually dies too. Like he witnesses Katie kill Mika and then she turns around and kills him too before going upstairs.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
I can't remember which one it is. It might be Ghost Dimension or it might be the Marked Ones. I don't know. But
I think the version that I watched, it was the ending where she kills Mika She comes upstairs. Mika gets launched at the camera. She
throws his body at the camera. Yeah.
And then she's like standing there for a second. You can see that she's covered in blood, and then it just ends.
Yeah. They have, it's like throws Mika into the camera and then does like the demonic face towards the camera. And the second one, she dies by cops. And then I think the third one, she just comes upstairs and she just slits her throat on the camera. Like those are the three endings.
Yeah. There is one thing that's not tied to like favorite or scariest or anything like that, but just something that I want to shout out about this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this was one of the first movies, and it is because it's a found footage. Yeah, I guess it is a technique that's primarily in found footage. But this is one of the first movies that I saw where they mastered the art of taking extra time in a shot and then having nothing happen, and then taking extra time in a shot and having a like jump scare or a scare at the very end of it.
Yeah.
So that way you've had so many of these shots where it builds to nothing that like the tension builds and then it goes away, and then it builds and then it goes away. And then once you finally trust it, then something scary happens.
Yeah. I like that too. I appreciate that a lot.
Yeah. They did that very well.
Mm-hmm. And it kind of continues on in the rest of the series too.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's quite a few scenes where they're in bed at night and it just zooms through the whole night and you don't see anything and everything's fine.
And everything's fine. And you're like, why did they even put that night in there? Okay, we're moving on to the next.
Yeah.
Or like the tiniest thing happens. The door like moves and then goes back. And like that's all that happens that night.
Yeah.
It was pertinent enough to put in there so you could get the whole story.
You know how we've talked about how if you do mushrooms and watch a scary movie, it's like you're watching it again for the first time.
Yeah.
Mushrooms and Paranormal Activity.
Yeah, it'd be like watching
that. Could be fun.
We should do that. All right, you ready for trivia?
Yeah.
So.
Oh, actually, my very last thing to say about this movie was I just wrote down, Micah's an ass, TBH. He's not a likable character to me.
Not at all.
No.
I don't really know what she sees in him, but maybe she just doesn't think she can do any better.
Yeah. Yeah, he's kind of a douchebag.
He's kind of a dumbass, too.
Yeah.
Ugh. Fucking Mika. Steven Spielberg had to stop watching the film halfway through on a home screener as he was genuinely spooked by the experience. He completed it in daylight hours the next day, and he loved it.
Spooked the Spielberg.
Uh-huh. The actors weren't given scripts, but were given guidelines on how to behave or what to discuss in their scenes.
Oh, okay. I like that.
Filming completed in 10 days. Paramount acquired the U.S. rights for $350,000. The film went on to make $193 million worldwide, making this the second most profitable film ever made based on a return of investment. The first most profitable is The Blair Witch Project, which cost $22,000 and made $240.5 million.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Holy shit.
I love Blair Witch.
And Blair Witch came out in 1999.
Yeah.
So this came out 8 years after that.
I fuck with Blair Witch.
Absolutely. That's so cool. I'm actually kind of glad that it didn't top Blair Witch either.
Yeah.
Because like I'm always wondering what it means when it's telling you how much money the movie made. Is that gross within the first year? Is that gross within the last 10 years? Is that gross just when it was in theaters? I don't know.
Yeah.
Right?
We definitely have to cover Blair Witch at some point. That was...
We should put it on the list.
That was a hyperfixation for me.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oren Peli got the idea for the movie from a personal experience. Late at night, he was sleeping and a box of detergent fell off of the shelf. The box was pushed far too back for it to just tilt and fall.
Oh... He was like, now hear me out. What if that was Toby?
Right. Oren Peli shot the entire film with a home digital camera.
Hell yeah.
That's pretty cool. All the crew had to wear black clothes at all times so that no colored reflections would show up on the walls or wooden floors.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. We talked about the three endings. The knife that Mika is wielding when talking to Katie during the making dinner scene at the beginning of the movie is the same knife he is killed with in the alternative endings.
Ooh, okay.
Yep.
Shot him with his own gun.
Uh-huh. Oren Peli bought the Ouija board from his local Costco. Although released by Paramount, this film is unique in that the studio's logo does not appear, nor do credits, except for one establishing copyright.
Huh.
Yeah.
You cannot still get a Ouija board at Costco.
No, you can't.
I go to Costco a lot.
You can get it from Target, though.
You can. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's. I think it's made by, like, Parker Brothers.
Yep, it is.
Yeah.
Filmed for $15,000 and grossed $9.1 million in its first week, breaking the record of highest grossing weekend ever for a movie playing at less than 200 theaters.
Damn.
So it did break a record. It was just in the first weekend.
Okay, the end of that statement, too. It made $9 million in less than 200 theaters. That's fucking crazy.
Yeah. I don't know how wide-released Blair Witch was, but...
I don't know either.
I don't really know.
Ooh,
we'll cover it.
Okay, so one day we should do the thing where you rent out a room at Studio One, and because I've never gotten to watch Blair Witch in the dark.
Oh.
Like, on a big screen.
Ooh, we could do that.
Yeah.
Okay, check this out. A third ending was planned where the possessed Katie corners Mika and bludgeons him to death with his precious camera while viewers would watch from the camera's point of view. In fact, this version of the ending was so complicated, not to mention brutal, that Pelle never actually shot it.
Wow.
It was just a concept.
Yeah.
It beat Saw 6 to the top of the box office charts, effectively bringing about the end of the Saw franchise. That's actually pretty funny.
So what you're saying is Toby killed Jigsaw.
That is what I'm saying. Oh, this is what I wanted to tell you. I'm just going to say it again because it's fucking cool. Producer Jason Blum worked at Miramax in the 1990s as a movie distributor. He passed on the opportunity to acquire the Blair Witch Project in 1999, a decision he quickly regretted when the movie became one of the most profitable low-budget movies of all time. The market quickly became saturated with knockoffs made for more money, but without the financial success. When the time was right, Blum produced his own low-budget found footage film with Paranormal Activity, a decision that paid off as he was able to found Blumhouse Productions with the profits. Let's see. According to the timestamp on the video, many of the demonic activities occur between 2 and 3:30 a.m. This is a time known as dead time among paranormal researchers, and it is when demons, spirits, and entities are supposed to be the most active. Let's see. This is included amongst the 1001 movies you must see before you die, edited by Steven Schneider.
That makes sense.
Right?
Yeah. I feel like anybody who's a horror movie fan should watch this.
Oh, absolutely you should.
Yeah.
While Mika and Katie are talking with the psychic Dr. Fredericks, he mentions the spirit feeds off of negative energy. Mika makes a comment and says, "Well, your mom shouldn't come over anymore if that's the case," implying Julie is still alive visiting her daughter. However, in Paranormal Activity 3, Julie dies by Toby throwing her down the stairs with Katie crying over her body, therefore making Julie not able to ever visit Katie in San Diego. I don't remember Julie dying in Paranormal Activity 3.
I don't remember her dying either.
Oh, yes, I do. It's not grandma. It's mom.
Oh, yeah.
It's mom, not grandma.
Yep.
So she definitely was thrown down the stairs. That was like my favorite
part of that. Yeah, she was gone, done, been yoded down
those stairs.
Because
when you just see like, her feet just like floating.
Yeah.
Some of the most significant disturbances in this movie happen exactly at 3:15 a.m., the same time when George Lutz claimed he would wake every night in the infamous house at Amityville. For example, the horrific scream and the loud bang occur as the clock on the camera reaches 3:15 a.m. Likewise, Mika's death appears to be timed to the very same second. The hour between 3 and 4 a.m. is often referred to as the witching hour or the devil's hour because it's an inversion of the time in which Christ supposedly died and perverting his holy sacrifice. Okay, this is kind of cool. So the weekend that this opened was October 9th through 11th in 2009. On October 25th, so before Halloween that same year, Paramount Pictures announced plans for a sequel.
Wow, that quickly.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, not even a month. It hadn't even been out a month. And they were like, we're making another one.
They're like, we're banking on
that. We're making seven more.
Yep.
Let's see. Oh, here, you'll like this one. When Mika is walking around the microphone trying to get an EVP recording, he asks, "What is your quest? What is your favorite color?" This is a quote from Monty Python and the Holy Grail. It's taken from the Bridge of Death scene where the bridge keeper asks Lancelot, "What is your name? What is your quest? What is your favorite color?" I think that's it. It was shot out of sequence. It's the only other thing I have.
I feel like this is a movie that I love the trivia that we've gotten, and I want to learn more about the techniques specifically.
Yeah, no kidding. Because, yeah, if we're thinking about, like, our ratings right now, I'd be interested to know about, like, quality, right? Because, like, on a $15,000 budget, it's pretty good. It's a pretty good movie.
And for its day, like, when I watched it initially, I have no idea how they would have done those effects.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Would have completely taken it at face value, if we're being totally honest.
That was part of what made it so scary, was like, a lot of the time, especially in older horror movies, you can kind of see or kind of guess how certain things are accomplished when it comes to the spook factor.
Absolutely.
I couldn't even shoot a guess at any of this. Like, I could do the door opening and closing. I'm like, that makes sense. That's easy enough.
Sure.
But, like, the Ouija board situation, her getting pulled out of bed, all that kind of stuff.
The footprints on the floor. Yeah. Right. Or even just, like, some of my favorite scenes are when they hear something, like, a loud bang, and they run downstairs, and, like, the chandeliers swinging back and forth.
Yeah.
Like, those are kind of cool moments to me, where you're like, obviously something happened, but, like, you don't know what it was.
Yeah, and the chandelier is... it's like focused on for a second and then it's gone. So it's really just there to like build the scene. It's not even there to be
the thing, the event that's happening. Yeah, absolutely.
Shall we get into rating?
I think we should. I'm blanking on a murder weapon, honestly. Because
there's just the knife.
And I mean, it kind of depends on which ending you're looking at, right? Because you could see a gun. Because like, you know, in the ending that I watched, Katie gets gunned down by the police.
And you could say a video camera. Because she like beats him to death in the unfilmed
version. Yeah. Besides that, it's just a knife.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to see something that's not lethal, you could do like a demon bite.
Yeah. I could just say Toby.
Toby. Yeah.
Yeah.
Toby
has the weapon.
Yeah. Toby kills a lot. Honestly. Yeah. Is that who you're going with? Toby? I'll go with the butcher knife.
Yeah. I could go with Toby.
All right. Let's do it.
Yeah.
You do your rating first.
So for quality, I'm going to say it's a 3 out of 5. Rewatching it now as an adult, I feel like I could gather a little bit more.
Right.
The effects don't really hit quite as hard, mostly just because we've seen it a lot more now.
And it is 20 years old. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Almost 20 years old.
All horror movies don't age super well. Like, you learn more about how it's done.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
You see the pitfalls as it ages, right?
Like, yeah. Yeah, horror as a genre, more often than not, hits really hard the first time you watch it, and then it fizzles out a little bit.
Yeah, and then afterwards you just appreciate it. You don't really, it doesn't hit you the same way.
Yeah, so I'll say a 3 out of 5 for quality. For scariness, I have it broken into two things.
Okay.
Originally, when I watched it, scariness was 5 out of 5. This was the most horrifying thing I had ever watched at that point.
Yeah.
It scared the shit out of me. Like, I was scared to be by myself.
After watching this?
For a while.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
Damn, I wish I had that same experience after watching this movie.
It freaked me the fuck out. And I feel like the first time I watched it, like, in the dark at my dad's house.
Right.
And he always lived out in the middle of nowhere. When it got dark, it got really dark.
Sure.
And it was always only just like me, him, and Shell. So there wasn't a whole lot of people in the house.
To begin with.
Yeah. It was right set and setting, and it got me.
I just I don't even remember the first time I watched this movie. Like, I'm really like trying to picture when it was, where I was when I watched it. Like,
yeah.
Just totally blanking on it.
Yeah. It was the scariest thing for me for a long time. I think the only thing that maybe got me as much was The Descent.
Yes.
Yeah.
I remember The Descent really getting me.
But that's OG. Now, scary wise, it's like a 1 or a 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's more entertaining now, or more of them like you want to watch it just to kind of get that nostalgia fuel.
Yeah.
Just that and a bit of an appreciation too of like the roots.
Yeah.
Coming back to like where you came from, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's the nostalgia. It's how it's kind of the foundation of the found footage genre.
Right.
One of two founding fathers of the found footage genre.
Yeah.
It's more for an appreciation factor than a fear factor now. And then rewatchability, I gave it a 3 out of 5. I can see how a lot of people would watch this once and then never care to watch it again.
Yeah, it's kind of a one and done for a lot of people.
Yeah, it had been a long time since I had watched it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah,
I'd call it a good date night movie though.
It is a good date night movie for sure.
It's a good date night movie because it's going to make you like hold on to your date, right? To just be like, I need help. Sure. But and it's not like super terrifying. Like it will creep you out. Like it's one of those movies like we were just talking about leaving the movie theater.
Yeah.
You feel scared. You're like, okay.
And there is something to be said too for watching a couple have some strife and the guy being a jackass to the girl and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
It makes you look over and just appreciate your partner a little bit more too.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it is a good date night movie because it's like, you'd never treat me like
you're
that.
Like, fuck.
Yeah.
Just like be in a relationship with somebody for that long and to just not realize like how much of a piece of shit they are.
Yeah. When we were watching it, Nick was like, can I say something controversial? And I was like, I already know how this ends. But he was like, Mika's kind of hot. And I was like, until you know him.
Yeah, right. Until he opens his mouth.
Yeah. Yeah. Until he is Mika at all.
Yeah. No, it's literally, if he just stood there like a statue, yes, somewhat good to look at.
Yeah. But.
So for my rating, I'm going with a butcher knife. So, and for being honest, I almost went straight across the board with all three of my ratings. I feel like for quality, I'm going to give it a 3 out of 5. It does some really clever things for its time. But other than that, it's kind of boring.
Yeah.
Like, even though I can appreciate the kind of like, not really sandwiched surprises, but almost like these delays of surprises to kind of really like get you into this false sense of security before it scares you. But the majority of the movie, I'm just waiting for shit to happen. And yeah. It doesn't, and it kind of does that for most of the Paranormal Activity movies where you have a lot of context and then they kind of like throw in all the big scares towards the end of the movie.
This is kind of the opposite of Green Room where there is a lot of gratuitous scenes.
Yeah. Yeah. There's sometimes you feel like you're staring at nothing for a long time. You're like, why am I watching this? Or you're like, you're almost like waiting for like your brain to play tricks on you and something to run across the screen or something.
Yeah.
So I gave it a 3 out of 5. Scariness. Honestly, I gave it a 2 out of 5. Cause again, like there's not a lot going on that's really truly terrifying until you get to the back half of the movie. And then they kind of like, you know, put them all in at the very end. And then for rewatchability, I gave it 3 butcher knives out of 5. Like, I feel like I would watch it. It's honestly not my favorite out of all of them. But for it being like a pillar in terms of found footage horror films, like it's one that I feel like you have to watch.
Yeah.
Especially if you haven't seen it before. You got to know where like the rest of the found footage movies are getting it from.
Yeah.
Right. Cause like that trivia piece said, like there was a lot of like shitty found footage films that came out after Blair Witch. And I feel like there are also a slew of shitty found footage films that came out after Paranormal Activity also. Yep.
And then we got Hell House.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And isn't it Hell House? Hell House is after Paranormal Activity, right?
Yeah.
Right? But it's almost more of like a mockumentary than it is like a found footage.
True. True. They took that genre and fucking ran with it.
They did. They did a good job.
They did a damn good job. Mm-hmm. That's one that my rewatchability is
way up there.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So now let's just do what you're doing.
Yeah. So we knew well over a month in advance. Or right around a month in advance, that on the week of my birthday, we're going to be recording It. We're going to release The Shining, and we're going to record It.
Yes.
And so we knew, like, a month in advance that was going to happen. So I knew how long It is and was like, I got to start reading now. Because I read fast, but I also anticipated having to, like, get slog through a few pages and then just like set it down and then like slog through a few pages and set it down.
Right.
And let me tell you, all that I have been doing is reading it.
It's just consuming it nonstop. Yeah,
and I'm doing it the way that I did The Shining, where I will read to a certain point, and then I will go back and listen from where I started up to where I ended.
Oh, wow.
And so I'm listening to the full book and reading the full book.
Jesus, and that's so much content.
It is. It's so entertaining, though. It is so good. And I have not once found myself bored. This book is a tome, and it is from start to finish at 100. It is so good. Whether it's at 100 with character development, whether it's at 100 with like world building, whether it's at 100 with fear, it is doing what it does at the highest level that it can the entire time. And I am so fucking stoked to record.
And it much of it is about a killer clown?
Barely any of it. It is about balloons more than it's about a clown.
Pom-pom buttons.
Yeah, pom-poms, buttons, ominous voices coming from holes.
And a lot of, like, everyday fears, right? From, like, racism to just plain bullying.
Yeah.
You know, assault. There's a bunch of themes in there that are very, very tangible, very real, very much things that happen every day. They're just like turned up to 11 because of this supernatural entity that's like plaguing this town.
It's almost as much about birds as it is about a clown.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. That's what I really love about it is like most people don't understand because they only know it based off of the TV miniseries with Tim Curry, which is its own like iconic art piece by itself. Like,
yeah,
Tim Curry is known for playing Pennywise the Clown for a reason because he gave such a unique twist and take on it, but it's about so much more than a killer clown that eats children.
Yeah.
It's so much bigger than that.
There is only two other things that I want to say about it. It is one that this is genuinely one of the most evil characters that has ever been written into anything.
Mm-hmm.
He is unapologetically evil. And that's so cool.
He's the eater of worlds.
Yeah. He doesn't give a fuck about nothing. He just wants fear.
He just wants to eat. Yeah.
He just wants
to consume.
I haven't gotten to it yet, but if my assumptions ring true, I'm going to say something super controversial in that the scene that everybody thinks ruins this book or like ruins this book for them, I actually kind of agree that it should be there. If my assumptions of how this is going to play out go through, because I'm in the last 150 pages, so Jesus. I think I'm pretty close to when it happens.
Oh, right, right.
But if it happens because of why I think it should happen, then that scene actually makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know what scene you're talking about. Yeah. And they never talk about it in the movies because I don't think there is a good way to describe. Because I feel like that moment is just essentially innocence dying.
It's
children changing over from no longer being innocent, and that's kind of the physical way of doing that. And yes, I don't even know what I'm trying to say. It's not that it's gross. It's just like it's like a severance of purity and innocence.
Yeah.
Right. Because if you think about it, like the severance of purity and innocence started way before that. That outcome didn't need like them first meeting Pennywise in the first place is what would have severed purity and innocence, if you're being honest. Any type of like, you know, bullying or assault that you've experienced in your life, that's the severance of your innocence at that point. So
yeah, I'm curious to see how it plays out.
I think you'll enjoy it.
Yeah.
You understand now why it's my favorite book.
I do. I get it. I get it. And it's close up there for me. Like The Shining's always going to be number one.
Oh, yeah.
But it's probably number two or three. Like it's up there.
It's fucking amazing.
So that's been my whole life.
Yeah.
And then I guess a thing that I'm excited for is I get to go backpacking with Harrison this weekend.
Yeah.
And I was earlier today, I was a little nervous because the weather is definitely not looking good. But I think, you know, If anything, it's a learning experience.
Why, where are you guys going?
We're going outside of the Dalles. Yeah, the Blackberry Trail.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I've noticed about over there recently is, you know, they had that 100-car pileup out there, but it's not snowing anymore. No. So you should hopefully not get that up shit creek.
Yeah, it's not snowing anymore. It's the temperature has gone up a little bit. So even if it's going to be wet, it's at least not going to be super cold. What about you? What have you been up to? Have you been fucking waist deep in it?
I have also spent the last like week and a half, I'm mostly listening to the audiobook because I got it on Libby, and Stephen Weber just does such a good fucking job. This is my second time listening to it, and he does such a good job.
A fucking 46 hour long audiobook.
Probably playing like 20 different characters,
yeah,
at least. But it's really good. And I got the, you know, my big tome off the shelf. That's been kind of fun to like listen to it and have the book open just to kind of like read along. Yeah. That's been kind of fun. I read so much it last week that I went and got a tattoo that I've been wanting for a long time. Yee! For it. And I did the loser lover tattoo.
Yeah.
It was really funny when I was trying to describe it to the tattoo artist, like what I wanted. She didn't get the reference. And so I was like, oh, so it's if like somebody wrote loser on your cast in like black Sharpie and you took a red Sharpie and you just tried to change the S into a V.
Yeah.
And she was like, you described that so perfectly. I mean, it's literally what happens in the book. Like, yeah. and it was funny like showing it to my in-laws because they were like, you tattooed loser across your arm. They're like, why? It was funny trying to describe like it also. They're like, what is it about? Like, tell me what the book's about. And I'm like,
it's about it.
I said it's about a group of like seven outcasts and they all like find each other kind of based off of like the fact that like they constantly get bullied or like don't have any friends. And so they deem themselves the losers club and like they have to fight like a powerful entity that's like killing children. And that's like essentially how I describe it. But I'm also like, but it's like an 1100 page book. So like, it's about a lot more than that.
Yeah.
It spans like millennia of time. Like, and it does the millennia in a very short amount. And then it does like 30 years in the main chunk of the book.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just really weird. So I've been doing that. Got the tattoo. I've been doing a lot of climbing the last couple of weeks. So that's always makes me feel really good body-wise. And we're going tomorrow, which I'm really fucking stoked for. The last thing I want to talk to you about, I've been really excited for. I think I briefly mentioned this earlier. I got on this big Jeremy Saulnier kick, right?
Yeah.
Because we watched Green Room, and then I went online and I found Murder Party and Blue Ruin for free, but I only watched Blue Ruin. It was pretty good. And then I found out that Saulnier's newest movie, Rebel Ridge, is on Netflix. And I watched the trailer for it, and I was like, that actually looks kind of good. And so I decided to watch it because I really like Jeremy Saulnier's work, and it's one of the best films I've ever seen.
Hell yeah.
It's really fucking good. For context, it's about a former Marine, and he goes to Louisiana because he needs to bail his cousin out of jail. And so he has like a substantial amount of money on him in cash so he can go post bail and then help his cousin kind of start his life over. And he gets pulled over by the cops and they take his money legally through like civil asset forfeiture, some sort of legal bullshit.
Yeah.
And they tell him he can fight for it if he wants to, because they're basically telling him that like it's drug money and you have to prove to us that it's not drug money in order for us to give it back to you. Mm-hmm. But he has to get his cousin out of jail. Like he doesn't have like a week before his cousin might die from being targeted in this prison that he's being transferred to.
Yeah.
So he's like, the time is like click ticking down. And what I really enjoy about it is that the main lead is very much a force to be reckoned with, but he doesn't want to be. Like, he very much, like, from the very beginning, like, he just wants to get his cousin out of jail. He's not looking to pick a fight. He's not looking to, like, start a pissing contest. Like, he's trying everything possible to just, like, be polite and get his cousin out of jail. And this this police force in at large, like, this town, they push him over and over and over to the point where, like, he has to just, like, take the gloves off and just go after them. And I would say it's kind of like that movie Law Abiding Citizen. Did you watch that movie? Mm-hmm. But like without all of the like murder
Okay.
Like, it's kind of a revenge story, but he's not out to, like, kill everybody.
So it's one of those things where it's like he isn't out there to try to pick a fight, but everything is trying to pick a fight with him.
Yeah. And he really is, like, he's on this time crunch, and so he doesn't really have, like, a lot of options. And so he just kind of, like, you know, he tries every option possible to go the pacifist route.
Yeah.
And then he just can't anymore. And so I saw, like, some people that were comparing it to Jack Reacher, but Jack Reacher kind of wants to punch people in the face. Like, yeah, he's kind of looking for somebody to give him a reason to punch them in the face. And in this movie, this guy, he doesn't want to punch people. He doesn't want to hurt people. He's trying to be as calm and as, like, collected as possible. And then when he finally takes the gloves off, like, it's really, really good. What I really like about it too is that I really like when choreography is so tight that you can't tell that it was choreographed. You know what I mean? Like, especially in, like, the action sequences and the fight sequences, because I would call this movie, like, an action thriller.
Okay.
Not horror at all. Existentially scary, yes, because this shit actually happens to people, and it's fucking bullshit, and it's a way that, like, police departments, corrupt police departments, can continue to fund themselves by stealing money from other people.
Yeah.
It's a great movie that does a good job of saying fuck the police without actually saying it.
And I love a fuck the police moment.
And it's good too, because, like, not all of the cops are bad either.
Yeah.
Like, there are good cops in the movie. And so it's not to say that, like, ACAB and all cops are bastards and fuck the police, but, like, corruption is real. And when you give too much power to certain people and they're not being, like, regulated, they can go to really dark places. And I liked the social commentary that this movie kind of, it forces you to sit down and be like, holy shit, what?
Yeah.
And, like, really dive into it. And I found out that, like, Jeremy, that's the whole point of the movie, is he found out about civil asset forfeiture and just went down a fucking rabbit hole and was like, I need to make a movie about this.
Yeah.
I need to tell this story.
Yeah, I'm going to have to watch it.
It's good. It's a great date night movie.
Yeah.
It's so good. There's hardly any deaths in it. And it's just, it's good. It's
really good. I'm going to watch it. If Green Room is any insight into what he's capable of making, then I'm going to watch everything.
And I'll be honest with you, I think Rebel Ridge is better than Green Room.
Wow.
And I love Green Room.
Yeah.
I love it. But I feel like Rebel Ridge is more entertaining from start to finish than Green Room is.
Okay.
I feel like where I didn't feel like Green Room lagged at any point in the movie, it lags a little bit in comparison to Rebel Ridge.
Wow.
Like, every scene in that movie is meant for a purpose, and it's action-packed the whole time. And it's, like, 2 hours long.
Okay.
So, like, the whole time, I tried, like, 5 different times to do something else while watching this movie, and I couldn't. I physically couldn't. I couldn't stop watching it.
Yeah.
And I had to, at one point, like, I fell asleep while watching it, and I woke up and I was like, Netflix said I had finished it. And I was like, no, I didn't. Oh, I fell asleep. And so I had to, like, turn it back on. I was like, I have to fucking watch it. I had my client come in later so I could just, like, finish it on my table.
I love, though, when a movie is 2 to 2+ hours long.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel like it.
It doesn't feel like it at all.
Like Wicked.
Yeah.
Wicked's fucking 2 hours and 40 minutes.
And it does not feel like it.
It does not feel like it.
You're entertained from start to finish.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's everything for me today.
I think that is.
And you know what? I think it's just about time for us to end, because how long have we fucking been here?
Fucking 3 hours.
Oh, my God.
But we got 2 episodes done in 3 hours.
Hell yeah. Look at that.
Damn.
Damn. Damn. Damn. Damn. Echo. Are you Echo Bye-bye? Yeah? She's looking at me like, oh.
Tell everybody good night.
Tell everybody say good night. Echo, come here. Yeah, bye. Hey, everybody. It's Karina. I'd like to tell you of a couple of announcements. We have got a Patreon now. You can subscribe at patreon.com/ It's Always Spooky. For $5 a month, we will be having some very special features, so stay tuned for those. Starting with every week, we'll be posting what episode we're planning on doing, so please make sure that you post your scariest and your favorite scenes so that we can feature them in the episode. If Patreon isn't your speed, you can also send us a tip on our Ko-fi account. That's ko-fi.com/ It's Always Spooky. Please, please, please also email us your spooky stories and any recommendations to itsalwaysspookypodcast@gmail.com. Thank you so much.
It's always spooky.